Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. We have a great show in store for you today. Today we have a very special guest joining us, Joyce Campbell, to talk about the Affordable Care Act, also affectionately known as Obamacare. But first, we have a few other things leading the headlines. In particular, President Obama commutes sentences for 8 inmates with crack cocaine convictions. We're also going to look at the Duck Dynasty debacle and PR executive Justine Sacco in our segment I'm going to call the Freedom of Speech. So let's get started. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. The phone lines are open. And joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and chief operating officer of Cook Enterprise. I introduce to some and present to others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's begin with President Obama's commutations this week. In particular, there's an article by Nakarama from the Washington Post. He reported that President Obama commuted the sentences of 8 people serving lengthy time for crack cocaine convictions, part of the administration's effort to reduce what it views as unduly harsh sentences for drug crimes and eliminate overcrowding in federal prisons. Each of them had served at least 15 years and had been convicted prior to the 2010 Fair Sentencing Act, which seeks to reduce the sentencing disparity between those convicted of crack and powder cocaine crimes, according to the White House. Now, in several cases, the sentences judge expressed frustration that the laws at the time did not allow them to issue punishments that more appropriately fit the crime. That's what the president said. Now, commuting the sentences of the 8 Americans is an important step towards restoring fundamental ideas of justice and fairness. So, Jima, my question to you, being that you are our resident expert in this particular area in the criminal justice system, is the president's is this the president's acknowledgement that the criminal justice system is flawed, particularly around drug convictions and minorities?
Oh, most definitely, which is why he's given Attorney General Holder the green light earlier in the year, where they changed the sentencing for those that were convicted of crack cocaine and just regular cocaine. So for sure, the president has recognized it long before now, but has just now taken, seemed like, a more public approach to acknowledging it, where people may have known how he felt, but his actions may not have matched hand in hand with what we thought he believed. And this right here is the beginning, I think, of things to come, especially with the change in the sentencing laws that came down from Department of Justice earlier this year. So this is all part and parcel to where the president has been going all along. We just thought he was moving a little bit too slow, because we thought maybe this is happening. You know, some things are better late than never. And this is one of those times. I'm pretty sure those people, although they wish maybe they could have gotten out, you know, last year or 3 or 15 years ago, I'm pretty sure that knowing that they're going to be getting out soon feels the same way it would have felt if it had happened 5 years ago. So we yes. have to take it as we get it and recognize that these things do take time, and you got to put things in order. And although we think the president has all this, you know, power, a lot of it is perceived. It's not all real. But he has given Attorney General Holder, and Holder spoke about this at the last NAACP convention, I believe he was at earlier this year at the Congressional Black Caucus banquet. So the Department of Justice under Attorney General Holder has been speaking to these issues over the last couple of years. And so it's been clouded in terms of what they've been doing, because we've been dealing a lot with the voting rights issue and some other things. But this has been brewing as well, and this is a win. This is a win for everybody, because we've known all along that these laws were wrong, and that those that were most affected were African Americans and Latinos. And so, and those are the ones who was getting these crazy sentences for, you know, not even being the person with the drug, but you get 3 life sentences. I mean, how does that happen? How did we, society, just even allow these laws to be instituted in the beginning? You know,
yeah, you know, so you talk about winners, and you talk about this 3 life sentences. That's, I want to talk about one of those, one person in particular, since you brought that up, and that person is Clarence Aaron. Aaron had been a college football star, a math whiz, and an admired young man in the community, but he was sentenced, as you just mentioned, to 3 consecutive life terms for a minor role in the drug deal. Now, the article says he grew up into manhood behind bars and became a model citizen in the criminal justice system. But what they don't mention is now that he's 43 years old, how he has been taken out of the community for all of those years, how he has not been able to provide financial support to his family for all of those years. So the larger issue is not just the sentencings, but the impact that these sentences have on the community at large when it comes to African American men in these communities. What do you think?
For sure. And when you think about when all these things started happening, we go back to the 90s, and we go back to some of our beloved president under Clinton, is when a lot of these laws were put into place. And so we're talking from the 90s, and this is 2013. You're talking about the fact that his whole life, I mean, and everything that he knew, he might as well forget, because nothing is the same. I mean, things change from year to year. So can you imagine, you know, being cut off from mainstream society for 10, 20 years? and expected now to come back out. So now the problem and the challenge becomes for these people that are being pardoned, and this is you know, this is another issue in general, for those that come out of the correctional institutions, what do we have to offer them? It's almost the same thing we have when we're dealing with our military and with our veterans. When they come out, when they get done with that time and with that, you know, those years of service, what are we providing them? This man is going to need a whole lot of assistance. And they can call it a handout. I don't even think he's going to care what you call it, but he's going to need a lot. His family is going to need a lot of assistance to help him get back into society because he's been gone for a long time.
You know, that's interesting because I want to unpack that particular question a little more, the question of what do they do when they come out, because it's interesting is because the laws that are in place now really disproportionately affect individuals when they come out of prison because the type of jobs they can hold when they come out. So that limits what they can do when they come out of prison. Moreover, if they are incarcerated for a drug possession or a drug offense, then that limits them for being on college campuses as well. So what are the opportunities for these individuals once they come out of prison, in particular when they're commuted in this situation? Does his record get pardoned, or is he now a kind of have a clean slate? You know, what happens in those instances?
Well, all of it is going to take time. It's not going to be an immediate expungement of his record, so to speak. And the pardon goes with the length of time that he won't have to serve. I have to research whether or not his overall record will be expunged because he was convicted. I think the pardon has to do with the amount of time that they have to serve, not necessarily whether or not it was a wrongful conviction. And so I think those are two separate things. You have a lot of that when you go back to some of the issues that happened in the city of Chicago with a lot of under that police chief of Burge there that had a lot of false imprisonment of people who spent 30 years in jail for crimes they didn't commit, and now those cases are being overturned. So there's a difference in your case being overturned and being pardoned for the crime. And so I think with the overturnment of the case is where your records are clear, and I'm not sure about that as it relates to a pardon. But either way, he's going to need some assistance. Either way, whether it's expunged or not, there are few places, and because it is a felony conviction, that will hire him, as you were alluding to, there are few places in which he can attend, you know, what types of school, you know, he may be doing research at the trade schools and different things along that nature. And this is where your you know, good nonprofits and maybe some religious organizations would be able to assist in helping him and all of those come out to some sort of safety net, to provide them with some sort of leadership and guidance and some classes and some training, all of those things. And like I said, not just for that person coming out, not for Mr. Aaron, but also for his entire family. Because now, you know, he's going to take on a different role. And what does that mean? And so what's missing often when people come out is the need for follow-up in terms of mental health services. Because one has to know that being locked up for an extended period of time does have an effect on one's psyche. And so to think that, you know, he's just going to be able to just come back and matriculate into society with no major issues, we're doing him a disservice as well by not preparing him for what, you know, lies ahead. And so it's going to be important that the community rally around and provide him with some safety and provide that family with some safety. But it's going to be because of the crime and because it was a felony, everything you said is true in terms of housing issues, going to school, being in certain places, certain types of jobs. It's not going to be easy. This is getting the pardon is just the beginning, definitely not the end.
You know, I wondered then, you mentioned all those wonderful programs that people have. I wondered then do the lack of those programs, or at least quality of those programs, is the cause of such high recidivism amongst inmates when they return from prison?
Yes, because when you look at, you know, having worked, you know, over 20 years in criminal justice and directly in juvenile justice, and the issues are the same whether you're an adult or a juvenile when you leave somewhere. You've been somewhere for 6 months, a year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. Doesn't matter what the time is, you've been away. And so when you leave that place where you've been, where everything for you has been structured, what time you get up, what time you go to bed, where are you going, what time you eat, how many times a day you can go to the bathroom, when you exercise, I mean, all of that is decided for you. The only thing you decide is how you're going to behave that day. But everything else is pretty much decided for you. When you're going to class and what subjects you're going to be taking, all of those sorts of things are decided for you. So you go from a world that has completely controlled you, where you have to follow the rules, to a situation where you're out and you make up your own rules. And if the place that you've been didn't prepare you for that, and that's 90% of the problem. The place that you were for those 8, 9, 10 months, a year, 2 years, 20 years, didn't prepare you for leaving. All it did was prepare you to be in that place. Then you are going to have all of those issues when you leave. So you go out and do the only thing you know how to do, and that's to get in trouble because you didn't learn anything about why you were in trouble in the beginning. So you never made the connection. So you get out. And you are a model citizen, and I've seen it. You're a model citizen when you're incarcerated. And when you get out, you have no control. But you have no control because no one has taught you how to control yourself. We've just shown you how to be in control, not how to control yourself. And that's a big difference. And people don't recognize that. So when people leave a program, what we used to call back in the day was wraparound services. Wraparound services are those things that before they leave your institution, before they leave you, some things should be in place. Because 9 times out of 10, if they're on medication, if you don't have them walk out of your facility with at least a 90-day supply, they're not going to continue to take their medication. And so, which then will have an impact on their behavior, which then will have an impact on what they go out and do, maybe commit another crime or do something else. And so you want to make sure that a plan has been developed prior to them leaving so that some of these things, and we can't catch everything because at the end of the day, the person still has to make the decision, but you want to make sure that you're giving them enough tools to be successful. And that has been the biggest downfall, in my opinion, in my experience, of our criminal justice system, is that we don't prepare people to leave, we prepare for them to stay in our institution. And so if you leave and I haven't given you the 90-day supply of medication, we haven't set up some places for you to go immediately for housing or immediate, you know, some place that you can go and live, if we're saying, okay, bye, or, you know, call me in a week and we'll go do this, we're setting them up because they're not going to be able to sustain themselves for a week with all this new stuff coming at them. So, you know, a lot of things should be done prior to them leaving, but there's not a lot of places, agencies that do it. There's not a lot of agencies that do it. And so when you do find one that does it and they do it well, they're overwhelmed because they do it and they do it well. And they don't have enough people to manage. So we have to find a balance there, and it's unfortunate that when we talk about it always comes down to money and what it's costing, but if we really look at what it costs us much more to incarcerate them than it will ever cost us to educate them and prepare them. And so, you know, we're talking out of both sides of our neck, out of our mouths, when what we really don't want to pay for it because we could have paid for it 3 times. By the time they come out, you know, being locked up somewhere.
That's interesting. Let's shift focus now for a moment to the Fair Sentencing Act. You know, it's interesting that You mentioned that the money that's involved in these decisions, right? Because it takes more to incarcerate it, as you stated, than it is to educate. But it seemed interesting that the president would have to come in 3 years ago and in August of 2010 and institute an act called the Fair Sentencing Act to reverse or to reduce the disparities between the crack cocaine and powder cocaine sentencing. So by him not only putting this act into play, but to also now taking action on the fact that he says, hey, you know, I did this thing 3 years ago. Now I want to take one step further to say, now let's reduce some of these people that are in. So let's talk a little bit about the law itself. Now, for those of the listeners that may not be familiar with the Fair Sentencing Act, it was a public law, number 111-220, that was an act of Congress signed into law by President Obama, August of 2010. Now, similar bills were introduced in the Congress before, but this law reduced the disparity between the amount of crack cocaine and powder cocaine needed to trigger certain United States federal criminal penalties from 100-to-1 weight ratio to an 18-to-1 weight ratio and eliminated the 5-year mandatory minimum sentence. So quite naturally, most of the powder cocaine, the more costly drug, was not incarcerating individuals at the same rate was crack cocaine, which is of a lesser value. And so it's essentially the same product. One just costs more than the other, and one may have a lasting, well, they both have negative effects on the body. But the disparity, of course, in the law itself tend to lean towards a certain population. So now that the act was instituted and President Obama took a step further to really do something about it, my question is to you, Jima, what is the impact that you think that this will have moving forward?
Well, it's so much damage has been done in this particular instance, it really is hard to see the forest for the trees because there have been so many lives wasted and so many families destroyed because of it. And so, you know, as much as I want to, you know, stand on top of the desk and be the cheerleader, I'm angry that it ever got to this point. Anyway, I'm angry that the president, you know, even had to reauthorize this and sign a new law. And I mean, it's almost like, who are these people that ever thought this was okay in the beginning? So the impacts are going to be long, and it's going to have an impact on our society for a long period. It already is having an impact on our society. And that's going to take another probably 10 to 20 years to eradicate some of that because it's because of the length of time we've been dealing with such disparities and inequities in our criminal justice system. I mean, it would be one thing if it wasn't that big of a deal, you know, if it was, it doesn't happen that often. But it has been out of order since its institution. I mean, everybody knows that crack got you a longer sentence than cocaine. Everybody, that wasn't a secret. People talk, I mean, it would be one thing if we didn't know that, but we knew that. And yet, you know, we didn't do enough, in my opinion, in the beginning to really scream loud about it. And I don't even know what happened in the last 5 years or so that has caused this to be a topic, even in mainstream media, for some to even be discussing it. But the impact is going to take a while for it to release its hold on us because we've been under it for so long. And those people who have had to endure it, you know, and this is just 8 of thousands. You know, that's why I can't, you know, I'm happy, but this is just 8 of thousands of people that have been incarcerated over, you know, a minor drug offense that has landed them in prison for a lifetime. This is just a drop in the bucket. So it has to continue. And I'm hoping that as I was reading a couple of days ago, someone was talking about making things retroactive. And we need to probably go back in and start releasing some of these people that may have gone in under these, you know, laws and make it retroactive, not just moving forward, but go back and get and release some more of these people that it wouldn't have to call for a presidential pardon to do that.
Yeah, so true. Well said. All right, we're up against our first break, and coming up at the top of the hour is our interview with Ms. Joyce Campbell talking about the Affordable Care Act. But after the break, we're going to shift to our segment called Freedom of Speech. We're going to talk about this Duck Dynasty debacle. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consultant firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And at the top of the hour, of course, we're going to kick off our interview with Joyce Campbell. And so we're going to be talking about the Affordable Care Act. But I want to shift now to the freedom speech segment, I call it. And I call it that because we are in this situation where you have these people, whether they be a celebrity, whether they be just a regular individual, whether they be executive, that are making statements. Now, on the one hand, one would argue that there's the freedom of the speech. On the other hand, of course, people are saying these people are insensitive to a particular group of people. And there are two specific incidents that happened over the last few days, and I want to talk about them both. But we first start with the Duck Dynasty debacle. Now, I want to read an article out of CNN, and it reads, Phil Robertson, a star of A&E's Duck Dynasty, has been suspended indefinitely after slamming gays in a magazine interview. We are extremely disappointed to have read Phil Robertson's comments in GQ, which are based on his own personal beliefs and are not reflected in the series Duck Dynasty, the network said in a statement Wednesday. His personal views in no way reflect those of an A&E Networks, who has always been strong supporters and champions of the LGBT community. The network has placed Phil under hiatus from filming indefinitely. Now, it goes on to say that Robertson said homosexuality is a sin and puts it in the same category as bestiality and promiscuity. It seems like to me a vagina as a man would be more desirable than a man's anus. That's for me. I'm just thinking. There's more there. She's got more to offer. I mean, come on, dudes, he says. So, Jimmy, my question is to you, is this the case of freedom of speech or is this something else?
No, you have freedom of speech, but I believe it was someone that said on Twitter, but there's also, with freedom of speech comes responsibility and accountability. So, yeah, you have the freedom to say what you want to say. As your employer, I have the freedom to hold you accountable for what you've said. Now, the only way I don't have anything to do with what you say and whether or not it has an impact on my bottom line, on my dollar, is if you do that in the privacy of your own home. Whatever conversation you have in your house, that's, you know, whatever. And if somebody wants to record you, then that's something you take up with them. But you're expressing yourself openly in a magazine, in an article that is going to be read by millions of people, and this is what you choose to say. And at that moment, you are representing me because you are on my network. So I have to hold you accountable to how you're representing me. But, yes, did he have the right to say it? Of course, because we do have freedom of speech. But with freedom comes responsibility. And sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And sometimes things are better left unsaid. And sometimes when you say something and you stand by and you believe it to your core, then you take the consequences that come with it. All of that is what makes America great.
So you're saying that, let me say it in another way. Are you saying that the companies have the right to infringe on a person's freedom of speech? I mean, it's right there written in the Constitution that, you know, we can say pretty much, you know, what we want. And so why is it then that if I can say what I want, I mean, we're talking about gays in he mentioned gays, and I think he said something about African Americans. I've heard worse comments against the president. So why is he getting this scrutiny for that, and I hear less scrutiny when people make statements about the president?
Okay, so let's separate the things out, though, because at that time, you have to, because if you try to put it all in the same bag, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get total confusion. So understand that, yes, you do have a right, but just like I can yell fire, if I yell it in a movie theater, I'm going to jail, right? Because I do have the right to say fire, but there are some places I should not say fire because then that's going to cause a panic and create chaos, and then I'm going to be held accountable for making that statement. So,
but he didn't say fire.
No, but you're keeping it on freedom of speech. So you're right. In the Constitution, there is the freedom of speech. In the law, there is accountability with what happens with that, though. So I'm an employee of said company for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. We have a list of rules, bylaws, and things that go against, you know, what we say our ethics are and what our personal this is and professional whatever. And I sign off saying I will abide by these things, and I will represent TaylorMade Company as an upstanding citizen at all times. I am representative of TaylorMade, and I understand that if any time I violate these things, that this is a potential outcome of what could happen. So there's a list of things that could happen. I could be fired. I could be suspended. I could be, you know, whatever. A whole lot of things could happen. So I decided to go out one day, and I'm doing a training representing TaylorMade, and I'm in this training, and all of a sudden I just go off on this tangent. that goes against the belief of TaylorMade. You hear about it. I had a right to say it because I'm human. I'm an individual. I'm protected by the Constitution because I have a right to say it. But as your employee, I also have to abide by the rules and regulations that you have set forth. So you can either slap me on the wrist and say nothing about it, or you can hold my feet to the fire and say you are out of order, you knew what the consequences were, you can no longer represent TaylorMade, because now I put TaylorMade out there, not just me, because I was representing TaylorMade. So now I put TaylorMade out there. So there's consequences for it. It's what it is. And
I like that argument because that argument is very telling in two ways. First, it is not the case that he doesn't have the right to say it, because no one's saying, yeah, go say what you want to. But the case is, right, if you say it, then I, as your employer, don't have to agree with that because you're representing me as well. So I think that's
exactly
a phenomenal perspective on the case, because when you look at what an individual does, yes, they have the right to do it, but as your employer or as an employee, then I have to make it known that I am responsible for the consequences even though I take this action. I love that perspective. So because that perspective bleeds over into the next case that happened with Justine Sackle when she tweets before she gets on a plane. And I mean, this goes to show you how Twitter is, right? I mean, she was on the trial by social media, right? She had her trial verdict and got convicted before she had landed off the plane. So that was interesting. So you think the same is in Justine's case, the fact that she tweeted about going to Africa and because it has AIDS over there?
Well, I think that was just stupid. Because it was just a stupid comment. And if you're going over, and she may have been going on a personal vacation, but maybe her Twitter account was attached to her job as PR for, I believe, IAC. So here you are, a public relations person. That's your career. That's your expertise. And you're going to put out a tweet that is highly insensitive, highly inflammatory, and just overall has some racial tinge to it, and the company had to do something. Now, whether or not she should get fired for it, I don't know. Whether or not, I mean, I don't know if it leads up to the level of being fired. I mean, I'm from an era of what we called You went through certain steps before you got to termination. So you may be suspended. You might be put on, you know, loss of pay, you know, all those sorts of things prior to termination. Because I don't think it was that egregious that she should be fired, but she definitely should be reprimanded because it was insensitive and it was just wrong. And
so here's what the quote says.
Yeah, read the tweet. Read the tweet.
It says,
yeah,
going to Africa, period. Hope I don't get AIDS, period. Just kidding. I'm white. I mean, all of that is just bad, right? I mean, she moves from going to Africa, making the direct correlation between Africa and AIDS, and the fact that since she's white, the implication here is that she can't get AIDS because of her race.
Right.
I mean, so many different things inside, and then to top it all off, she's PR. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
She's public relations, you know, and so and she's an executive. So everything that comes out their mouth is supposed to be in an inclusive, sensitive nature, and she just missed the boat.
Right. Right. And so who's now going to want to hire her as a PR person?
I mean, her name is naturally
not
known now. If she wasn't known before, she's known now.
Because I didn't know her. I had no idea who she was. I was like, well, who is she? But, you know, even now that I do know, you know, I still don't know if she should be fired, but she should definitely go to some sensitivity training and some diversity training and including whatever the buzzword is these days, training, about what that, you know, what and why people perceive that in the manner that it was perceived. And like you stated, she had so many things there. You know, first going to Africa, oh, that's nice, you're going to Africa. But then to say, I hope I don't get AIDS. Well, now that's a little, well, just by going to Africa, you don't get AIDS. Isn't there, I mean, which bleeds to her ignorance about how you get AIDS, right? So here's this, you know, supposedly high-level executive, and seems as though she's ignorant on the facts of how one can contract the AIDS virus.
Yeah.
And then to say, oh, I'm just kidding, and
right.
then to say, I'm white. I mean, she just kept adding. It's almost like, just go sit down before you say something else that's going to get you in trouble. So had she stopped with, I hope I don't get AIDS, she probably would have been okay. But then the just kidding, and then the I'm white, yeah. Before, like you stated, before she landed, her Twitter account had been taken down. Her name was no longer on the company's website as their PR person. And when she got off the plane in Africa, those that were there waiting to greet her told her, well, we hope this blows over. Because she didn't, I mean, all of this was happening while she was in her flight over. So when she turned her phone on once she lands, she just saw all of it. And it's rawness. And I don't know how many people follow stuff on Twitter, but Twitter can be brutal.
Yeah, yes, indeed. And they were relentless, too.
Twitter can break you down.
That's right.
I mean, really. In them 140 characters, they can break you down. So, and she got broke off on Saturday night. She really, or Friday night, she got broke off. So,
the true statement.
There's that.
All right. Well, we're up against our second break here. And at the top of the hour, we're going to have an interview with Joyce Campbell. Stay tuned. We're going to be listening to talking about the Affordable Care Act. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Point.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
in Washington. I'm Winter Johnston. The first full day of winter is delivering a wild mix of weather across the U.S. Hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses are without power in Michigan and parts of New England. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports a winter storm in the Northeast has left more than an inch of ice in some areas of upstate New York.
State officials declared an ice storm emergency for the northernmost part of New York State Saturday evening. Heavy freezing rain coated roads. Trees crackled and snapped under the weight of the ice. Travel advisories in place. The area around Watertown, an hour north of Syracuse, is the hardest hit, with downed power lines blocking roads and sidewalks. Several shelters have been set up in the area. Officials are using lessons learned from an ice storm 16 years ago that paralyzed the region for weeks. Almost 2,000 power workers have been mobilized from around the state to restore electricity. For NPR News, I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
Senior Israeli officials are demanding that the U.S. stop spying on Israel. Several news outlets published documents last week provided by Edward Snowden, a former contractor for the National Security Agency. They revealed the NSA had intercepted email messages from the offices of then Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and then Defense Minister Ehud Barak. Israel's Science and Technology Minister Yaakov Peri says he hopes the spying didn't reveal anything important.
Every empire makes its utmost in order to, in a way, spy or get information, even on a friendly state. I hope that they didn't find too much.
Israeli officials are also calling on the U.S. to release Jonathan Pollard. He's the former U.S. Navy intelligence analyst sentenced in 1987 to life in prison for spying on the U.S. for Israel. The International Monetary Fund is brightening its outlook for the U.S. economy in 2014. NPR's Martin Costi reports.
IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde sounded upbeat on NBC's Sunday morning show Meet the Press.
The economy has picked up, and we forecast further pickup.
Lagarde thinks the recent modest budget deal in Congress may reassure business leaders whose confidence was shaken by the government shutdown in October.
Seeing a budget deal, seeing tapering by the Fed, which is a sign of confidence in the real economy, should lead them to invest, to hire.
But she adds that the real test will be employment participation, the number of people willing to come back into the job market to look for work. Martin Costi, NPR News.
The average U.S. price of gasoline has dipped 2 cents a gallon in the past 2 weeks. That's according to the latest Lundberg survey. This is NPR. Syrian airstrikes hit a rebel-held neighborhood in the northern city of Aleppo today. Human rights groups say at least 32 people were killed. Aleppo has been a major front in the Syrian war since the rebels began an offensive there last year. U.S. Special Envoy Donald Booth is due in Juba today as part of an intense diplomatic effort to avert an all-out civil war in South Sudan. NPR's Gregory Warner reports the four servicemen injured in an abandoned rescue mission to South Sudan yesterday are reportedly in stable condition.
President Obama issued a warning to South Sudan's president, Salva Kiir, urging dialogue to end the political power struggle splitting the country. An alleged attempted coup last weekend has sparked violence along ethnic lines. Many fear it could spiral into an ethnic civil war. The remote state of Jonglei in the east of the country has been the scene of some of the worst violence. Three American C-22 Osprey aircraft were fired upon. Their mission to evacuate American citizens in Jonglei was aborted. The attackers seem to be rebel forces opposed to the current regime. Over 400 Americans have already been airlifted. Gregory Warner, NPR News.
A judge in Cairo has convicted three leading Egyptian activists of violating laws against protests. Each was sentenced to serve 3 years in prison and fined $7,200. They were convicted under a law passed last month that restricts the right to assembly in Egypt. New York-based Human Rights Watch says the law is stopping anti-government protests and is being used against secular activists. I'm Winsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from...
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, The number is 323-580-5712. Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking about the Affordable Care Act. We have a very special guest. Her name is Joyce Campbell, and she's going to be joining us talking about the Affordable Care Act, also affectionately known as Obamacare. And if you want to get in on the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Now, she's going to be here in just a few minutes, but before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the sports world. We didn't get a chance to cover this last week. I was actually involved in some other activities that prevented me to have this discussion, but I wanted to talk a little bit. Jim, I want you to weigh in on this, too, about what's happening in Washington with the quarterback there. Now, RG3 has been pulled and made inactive, and a lot of people believe that that wasn't the right place for him in the first place. What do you think now about that particular situation, and what's the future for RG3?
Well, I'm one of those people that believe that Mike Shanahan is a horrible coach for the player for Robert Griffin Jr. because of the type of player that he is. And Mike Shanahan is just not the right coach for him. When they drafted him, I said, that's not going to be a good fit. And I was right. And so the fact that we're here at this point, I'm not surprised. Mike Shanahan is who he is in all of his glory, whatever that means. And I just think it's been a great disservice to Robert Griffin for that to have happened. However, you do have to win, and you have to win on the field. And so I don't think he was completely healed from his injury. He didn't get the preseason opportunities because they wanted to rest him for regular season. And then here we are, four games from the end of the regular season, and you pull him. So not real sure, what that was all about. It's not an injury. It's not a he didn't go out on IR, so they just didn't want to play him anymore. Does he have a future in Washington? Not if Mike Shanahan is the coach. So the owner, whatever his name is, has a lot of things he's going to be concerned about during this offseason. They've been under fire for the name of the Redskins. Now you got quarterback issues. You got coaching issues. So Mr. Daniel Ryan or whatever his name, he's got a lot of work. Dan Snyder, I think that's his name. He has a lot of work to do in the offseason, and finding the coach might be one of them. After the game today against the Cowboys, that we won, they asked Mike Shanahan, is this your last press conference from this stadium? And, of course, he didn't want to answer that, but, it very well may be.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything. He hasn't won. They went to they did go to the playoffs last year, and then what? And this year you look like garbage, so...
And there is a school of thought that his style of play is kind of, is passe, right? There's a new breed of quarterback. There's a new breed of offensive schemes that is more relevant today in the NFL than his style of play, right? And so for him to not use the talent as in the right way kind of is a testament of his mentality. I mean, he may have a philosophy, but that philosophy may be outdated. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with his style of play when it was in Denver, when you had a quarterback, when you had a scheme. But I think those days are coming few and far between now. I mean, you got more mobile quarterbacks. They have more talent. They're more flexible. They can do more things. And his style of play, I think, is not conducive to RG3's style of play. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to that organization over the weeks and months to come. Now, other things happening in the sports area is Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union. Did I hear something about that? Did I hear some nuptials or something like that? What's going on in that particular relationship?
Well, I don't know if he went to Jared, but he went somewhere because he did pop the big question to her last night, and she said yes. So
wow.
After... I don't know how long it's been, probably about 3 years or so that they've been dating, probably longer than that. She hung in there, and she played her position. She stayed in her lane. And at the end of the day, he recognized when because he could have walked away either way. You know, he didn't have to propose. And depending on how long she would have stayed around, it would have been up to her. But he decided to make an honest woman out of her, and so she said yes. So Dwayne Wade is officially off the market. He has proposed to Gabrielle Union, which places her off the market. And so congratulations to them both. I think they're a cute couple. Anyway, they just seem like they have fun together and that they respect each other's stereos. So I think that's good.
Yeah, and I wondered, did LeBron James have any influence on him, you know, making a move like that? You know, especially when you're hanging around your partners in crime and they start to tie the knot or they have families, they have relationships, they don't do certain things, and it makes you want to look on that side. And do you think he had any influence at all on it?
Well, I think just what you said. At some point, when your inner circle is making those types of changes and those types of moves, you either join in or you find another circle. And Dwayne Wade is no spring chicken. You know, ain't like he in his 20s, you know, or early 20s or nothing. He on the downside. So, you know, he has to recognize that there will be life after basketball. And how do I want that life to look, and to whom do I want to share it with? So I think that, you know, probably played a lot in it. And he's, you know, been applauded over the years for his relationship with his kids and his sons and how he takes care of them. So, you know, you want to be an example, especially to boys, about what it is to respect a woman and to care for a woman. And although he and the mother didn't fare out well, you know, I want you to see this another way. You know, and so I think that speaks volumes to his level of maturity. And I think the fact that he didn't rush into anything with Gabrielle, or that they did take the time, you know, to explore one another and to for him to get all of that, because that's some baggage when you come out of a messy divorce and you got, you know, kids involved and the media been all up in it. And you know, even recently, you know, last couple of months, he was talking about something. So the fact that, you know, he took his time and he didn't try to rush and run away from all of those emotions. So hopefully that he'll come to Gabrielle a little bit more whole than what he was when he was in his first relationship.
I have to agree with you on that. You know, I wonder now as he ties the knot, you know, how many more years you think he has before he calls it quit and playing basketball?
Well, you know, he's kind of injury prone, you know, so I'd give him a couple of more years, probably maybe three tops, depending on if he gets another real bad injury. But I'd say he probably got about a good 3 to 5 left, but three still good. Three still where he's making an impact and he's just not on the team. You know, I'm hopeful that he'll walk away on his own terms and that it not necessarily have to be an injury. I mean, basketball can only take one Kobe. You know, we couldn't have, you know, him out and Kobe out and somebody else out with, you know, we got Derrick Rose out again. So it's like, you know, what in the world? So it's kind of like we want him to stay around as long as he can, but not overdo it. When he feels as though he can't recover from one injury, then just stay on out the game.
So speaking of Kobe,
he
hurt his knee again. And is this the end? Is this the beginning of the end for Kobe Bryant?
Well, Kobe's another one. Although he came in at 18, Kobe's been in the league for a while. So his body is not going to recover from these injuries like people expect him to. I think Charles Barkley said it best this week when he said, you know, Kobe is not going to be Mamba. He's not going to be the Black Mamba that he was before because of the type of injury that it is. And we have to respect that. Kobe now has to make a decision how he wants to go out. Now, he just signed that big fat deal. I'm not real sure why the Lakers gave him all that money, but hey, somebody want to pay me, knowing the, you know, consequences and the situation might look a certain way, I'm going to go on and sign my name on the dotted line as well. I can't fault him for that. So, if he gets hurt any other way, Kobe don't even have 2 years left. I mean, this might be it for him now, depending on how he recovers from this last injury. I mean, they say nothing's broken, but, you know, his mind, you know, that takes a lot on your psyche when you keep getting injured like that. You know, at some point your mind is going to, you know, not give you the confidence it needs you to go back out on the court.
That's a true statement. Well, we're up at the top of the hour, and we're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to be talking to Joyce Campbell. That's right. We're going to be talking about the Affordable Care Act. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and my dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club, or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I am so excited to announce a person that I have just grown to just know and love, and she has a lot of great information to bring to us, and that is Joyce Campbell. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Now, she's touching people and assisting people in many diverse communities, and has done so for nearly two decades as a seasoned community development strategist. Her career in community outreach, education, and collaborative partnership development began as a grassroots volunteer and evolved into diverse, extensive experience gained through positions held in banking, state government, and nonprofit industries. Now, with a specialty in corporate social responsibility, Joyce helps organizations and communities in targeted geographic links creativity strategically and realistically about their goals, program, and funding sources. She holds a master's degree in counseling psychology and a bachelor's degree in business psychology from Texas A&M University at Texas Arcana. She is an ordained minister in the African Methodist Episcopal Church and is currently pursuing a master's degree of divinity at Southern Methodist University, SMU Dallas. She has one daughter Major Natasha Campbell, currently serving in the United States Army. I'd like you all to help me welcome Joyce to the show. Joyce, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Patrick, for having me on. I'm a consultant.
All right. Awesome. So I'm glad you brought that up. I know I kind of gave a formal introduction of who you are, but I would like the listening audience to hear from you. So first, tell us kind of who you are and your background a little more informally and the things that you do. And we're going to move directly into ACA.
Okay. I've been working in the community development field for the last 20 years, and I work for Capital One Bank as one of their top executives for community reinvestment. I formerly worked for Hibernia Bank, one of the largest banks, the largest bank in Louisiana doing community development. And from 2004 to 2007, I was a policy advisor for minority affairs for former Governor Mike Huckabee in Arkansas. And so I'm a consultant now working in low-to-moderate income communities. And recently, back in March, I secured a contract with a firm out of Washington, D.C. to do some education around the Affordable Health Care Act. So I'm a consultant working in community development with nonprofits, different issues. And I love working on the legislation and educating around the Affordable Health Care Act.
Awesome. Speaking of the Affordable Care Act, there were some problems with the rollout. But since that time, there has been a lot of improvement in, A, the website, and, B, the enrollment. So can you talk a little bit about perhaps – some of the nuances with the website and perhaps maybe what's preventing people to get signed up?
Right. Okay. But let me first preface it by saying this is the most comprehensive healthcare reform that this nation has ever seen. So we recognize that it was not going to be easy, it was not going to be quick, and we were going to have some hiccups and some glitches. And so the major glitch has been, I'm going to say three major glitches. The website has been one because you're trying to roll out 34 states, over 30 states on a federal site because you've got 14 states plus Washington, D.C. That has a state website. The other states are on a federal system. That's a lot of states to try to roll out a comprehensive system for the first time. Number two, one of the other hiccups I think is that the amount of education that consumers should have gotten prior to October 1. It's pretty complicated. This is a very complex issue. And to think that we could educate consumers in a couple of months to get ready for enrollment, in my opinion, was one of the other mistakes. And then the third thing is having enough navigators, qualified navigators, to help be able to assist the consumers to be able to understand the basics about how to sign up on healthcare.gov and how to understand the basics about insurance. And so that's kind of the framework of the general challenges that we're having. The website is better. President Obama and that team has been working to improve that. It has improved since November. So the challenges are making it very hard to be able to see some quick numbers. And I don't think we were going to see quick numbers because it's just so very, very comprehensive, Patrick.
Okay. I mean, and that makes a lot of sense. I mean, a lot of people were under their, I guess, false pretense that, you know, this thing was going to be a smooth transition. But I like the fact that you mentioned two critical things. Is one is about the training before the rollout. So, and then you mentioned the issue about navigators. Can you talk a little bit more about, A, what's a navigator, And then B, what are some of the things that people need to know had they had the information before the website? What do they need to know now since it's rolled out?
Okay, a navigator, well, let me say this. The federal government allocated a little over $60 million to provide grants to different nonprofits, businesses, and organizations across the nation to set up systems to help navigate people through the process. The state of Texas got about $10.2 million, which is not a lot of money, really, considering you have over 6 million uninsured in the state of Texas. And so the federal government allocated this money. Texas got about $10.2 million, and you have different organizations who went in and applied for the money to be able to come navigate our agency. And so in the Dallas area, you've got a number of organizations like Community Council of Greater Dallas, United Way of Tarrant County, and a number of others who receive dollars to employ and train individuals who are familiar with healthcare.gov, the rules and the structure for being able to enroll consumers. And there's a limited amount of navigators. So if you want to enroll and you want to talk to a person, you can literally call one of those organizations. You can find a list of them on the site and set up an appointment and meet with them, and they'll actually sit down and help walk you through the process. There's a second set of individuals that are in the marketplace. They're not called navigators. They're called certified assistance counselors. They, too, are trained to help you navigate through the process, but their training wasn't as a deeper depth of training as navigators, and a lot of these are volunteers. The hospitals like Methodist Hospital, Parkland Hospital, they literally trained a lot of their employees to be what you call certified assistance counselors. And so you can also receive assistance from them as well to help you navigate through the process. A third way, so you've got the certified navigators, you have certified assistant counselors, but you also have insurance providers that can directly help you navigate through and enroll you. And typically you will go to when I say a provider, I mean an insurance company. If you are not trying to get a subsidy, those of us, if you make too much money and you can't get help with paying your premiums, then you can go directly to an insurance provider and be enrolled. So you have three ways, three different groups that can help you navigate through the process: the certified navigator, the certified assistance counselor, or an insurance provider.
Awesome, awesome. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, and I'm speaking with Joyce Campbell, an independent consultant, and we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, affectionately known as Obamacare. Now, you mentioned three specific ways that an individual can get more information regarding the Affordable Care Act, particularly around signing up and getting registered. The first one was certified assistant counselors. The second one is what they call certified navigators. And then the third one is going directly to an insurance company, what is known as insurance providers. Are there any specific locations that has these people available? I mean, let's say, for example, I'm not tech savvy and I'm not aware of all of the different language and things on the website. Can I go to some location here in Dallas, a local, and in my community to go and get this help from people?
Yes, you can. There are a lot of organizations and churches that are hosting enrollment events. And the Community Council of Greater Dallas is keeping a calendar of those enrollment events. So you can go onto their website. There's another organization called Be Covered Texas. You could go on the Be Covered Texas website, and you're able to find some enrollment events there. And there's just a lot of enrollment events that are being organized. For instance, the Martin Luther King Center is going to do a massive enrollment event on the weekend of the Martin Luther King birthday celebration on January the 18th from 11 to 4 o'clock. So you have churches, and another place you can go and get a list of the enrollment events is the county. Judge Clay Jenkins has been a strong advocate and of helping to push the organization of enrollment events, so his office has a calendar. So you've got these different calendars that the NAACP are sponsoring enrollment events. So if you want to know where an enrollment event is, get in contact with your NAACP. The Urban League of Greater Dallas has a calendar, and they do enrollments. They're certified navigators. United Way of Tarrant County. And then there are different organizations such as the YWCA, the YMCA. Most of the nonprofits that have consumers that need this affordable care insurance will have some sense or list of where the enrollment events are.
Wow, that is great, great information. Again, you're listening to Joyce Campbell, Independent Consultant, and we're talking about the Affordable Care Act. So I have a question around basics of insurance. Now, you mentioned yesterday in our conversation about the disconnect between people understanding, you know, about insurance and as it related to the Emancipation Proclamation. I want you to talk a little bit about that, because I want the people to get from you what I got from you yesterday about that particular statement.
Well, when I started on this contract back in March, Patrick, I did a lot of studying. Again, I was a policy advisor for Minority Affairs for Governor Huckabee, so I certainly understand a lot how legislation works and the bureaucracy of it, and something this comprehensive, that it wasn't going to be easy. And so when I started educating and recruiting organizations to distribute information to their consumers and their customers, I discovered when I did a slight survey that about, I'm going to say about 85% of the people, when I asked them how familiar were they with the Affordable Health Care Act, they didn't even know that the legislation had passed. This law passed March 23rd, 2010, and what I felt like was happening was it was like when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation in January of 1863, and it was not till June of 1865 that Texas got the news. And so it has been, in my opinion, of the Affordable Health Care Act. A lot of people, there was so much noise around trying to repeal it, the disagreements around it, that a lot of people were not even aware that not only had the law passed in 2010, but a lot of things were being implemented, like your children can remain on your insurance as a dependent up to age 26. That's been out there for every American citizen that had a young person under age 26 that they need to keep on their insurance as a dependent. For example, also, there's something called an 80-20 rule, where the insurance companies can't spend any more than 20% on admin. They've got to spend the other 80% on your health care. And because of that ruling, 2010, people have been getting rebates on their insurance policies where they were getting money back. And so not only had the law passed, but a lot of things were already in place, like your preventive care. There's no copay, and a lot of people were recognizing that they weren't doing copays for preventive, but they didn't know why. But it was because of the Affordable Health Care Act. And so we've been slowly getting the news and didn't realize that it had already happened. Yes, I think the reason for doing substantive education. So a lot of people are hearing the noise around it and not even realizing what a great piece of legislation this is to help make a nation healthier, live longer, and have great quality of life. You know, we're free from not being able to have quality health care. And so, you know, we were freed from slavery. And, you know, even after we were freed, a lot of the slaves remained on the plantation. I think so it will be with this law, that it's been signed, it is law. But a lot of people are going to remain where they are until they become more educated, until they see the need. So it's still a lot. We got a long way to go on this law, long way to go.
I mean, that's so powerful to be able to make that connection, because that resonated with me so well yesterday. And here we are, yet in another situation, we could potentially be left behind if we don't get out there and do something about that. And I know some of the noise that you mentioned is tied up into the way the media is portraying, or more in particular, the way the media is tying the website to the law. The website was one thing, but the law is something totally different. And moreover, there's been cases where people are trying to say that there is some fraud with signing up people. Can you talk a little bit about, can you dispel some of the notions of this fraud, quote unquote fraud, that people are signing up with Obamacare?
Yes. When people are not fully aware of facts, sometimes things can be misquoted, they can be misrepresented, they can be distorted, either intentionally or unintentionally. I think that because the education around this has been so hurried, and this is the most comprehensive healthcare reform this country has ever been a part of. And so you got a lot of rushing and misinformation and a lot of moving pieces. Let me say it this way. The rollout is like flying the plane and building the wing at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And so with that, you've had a lot of information that's been misquoted, misunderstood, in the rush, in not knowing sometimes how things are connected. And so in relation to the difference between the law and the website, the law is here to stay. The website just needs to be fixed. And that's happening, and that has been improved. And so a lot of times the media, I love that you're doing this show, Patrick, because we have to learn how to critically think. You know, you can't just accept everything that's said, because there's always some other pieces that go with it. You know, they would have you believe that because, you know, there are some incidents that happen with navigators, but I think that's because the time frame on what it took to get someone trained. For example, the grants for navigators didn't roll out until August the 15th.
Hmm.
I mean, do we really think that we can get people hired and effectively and efficiently trained And for October the 1st,
mm-hmm.
because if you got the news on the grant by October 15th, you're going to take the rest of the month to get the paperwork done to get ready to get the grant. By this time, it's September. And so you really think you can understand a new system that's about to roll out, hire people, and get them trained and have them ready for October 1st? Well, that was a setup for failure right there, in my opinion. This is a consultant. This is my opinion. We know how long it takes to hire people and train people, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of still moving pieces. For example, even when the grants were awarded, even by the time we got to October 1st for enrollment, we were unable to get answers from the IRS about how are they going to track individuals if they don't sign up so they can be assessed a penalty. It is December, and I still can't get an answer from IRS because I'm not sure they know.
Right.
So you got all of these moving pieces, and I'm not sure that the media was taking that under consideration because they just report what they see, and they don't bring in the backstory that gives it some context to make it, make sense.
So now we can effectively say we can put that behind us, and now we need to now take this first step forward. So what should the American people be charged to do now? I mean, what should be the first thing that me as a person that may be uninsured, that needs health care, my kids need health care, my mom, my dad, my uncles, we need to go out there and get help. What's the first step that I should take?
Well, I think the first step is take the time to at least find out the basics. At least know that the law passed. and the general timeline, and look at it to see how it can benefit, because it can benefit you if you have insurance, and it can benefit you if you don't have insurance. So I would say the first step is go on www.healthcare.gov and at least do some reading. On the federal website, any question you think you can ask, I've got to tell you, they've done a great job on the website providing information and addressing any questions you can think of. So first step, get some information, some factual information. Visit the healthcare.gov website. The second thing is, when you become generally aware, help to make others aware. We have cousins and uncles, brothers and sisters, and even ourselves sometimes, because I'm in the process of getting insured. I'm one of the uninsured that probably wasn't counted, because at the time I was insured. I rolled out of corporate America almost a year ago and started this consulting business in school full-time, and I'm in the process of shopping for a health care. So first thing, get some education personally, and then help those who need to get insurance, because there's no option of whether you're to be insured. The law says every U.S. citizen must have insurance. You must. So it's not a matter of if. It's where will I get it and how will I get it. So get educated, share with some others, and help be a part of the team that helps move this country to a place where we are healthier, where we are happier, and where we get our checkups, and where we have adequate health care to take care of ourselves and our family. Because the bottom line is that there are penalties attached to this. And if you're one of those who can afford to have insurance, because everything is income-based. Actually, there are three groups out here. You got a group that's uninsured, that have income levels that can help you, that where you can become eligible to get help with paying your insurance. That's one group. Then you got a group like me where I make too much money to get help with my premiums, but I still have to have insurance. Then you've got a third group that doesn't fit in either one of those, that they have an income that's low enough that they can get Medicaid. So you got three groups that have to get insurance. The ones that are within the income level that can get subsidies and get help. Then you got another group that has income that you can't get help paying your premiums, you got to pay your own premiums. And then you've got a group that doesn't fit in either one of those. And at least being aware of which group you fall in. And if you already have insurance and your family is already secure, then you will be able to help make some others aware to help move them toward enrollment.
That's awesome. You know, one of the things I got out of talking with you yesterday is that there are really two distinct areas in which we must pay close attention when we're talking about signing up for this health care. One is the registration process. That's a very distinct process that you get enrolled and you talk about and you determine your eligibility, right? That's one particular process. The second process, and I think it's just as, or maybe more important, is determining what kind of plan that you should be on. And so when you're looking at the second option I just talked about, the determining the plan, that is a very comprehensive process which take you time to go out there and look at what those different options are. And even before that, you talked about educating yourself. And some of the terms that really need to be investigated is like differences between HMO versus PPO. What's a deductible? Do I qualify for a subsidy? What is a copay? What are premiums? So what are the metallic plan that I should be a part of? So when you talk about this education process, or at least getting informed, I just wanted to make it kind of somewhat clear or explicit that the registration process is one thing, but understanding what healthcare plan is really just as or maybe more important in a lot of cases. What do you think about that?
Patrick, I think you're absolutely right. I think getting enrolled is probably of the two processes between getting enrolled and picking a plan. In my opinion, getting enrolled is probably the simplest thing. For example, if you think you qualify for a subsidy, there are two reasons you're going to go on healthcare.gov. If you think you qualify for a subsidy because they have to determine your eligibility, or if you're just surfing and looking for information and you want to plug in some things and see what fits, you can do that. That's relatively easy. Basically, you'll go on, you'll set up an account. It takes about 5 minutes, and then you'll do an application, which, depending on your family structure, can take you anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour. And that's all information that you're plugging in. So that's not difficult. The time consuming is the amount of information that you have to put in, like your Social Security numbers, and they're going to ask you some questions about your income and your household structure. After that, they will generate an eligibility letter at the end of that once they approve your application. And then you get, on your eligibility letter, they'll have a barcode on it, and it will confirm, you can confirm your identity. After you do that three-step, set up an account, complete the application, get the eligibility letter, confirm your identity, now you're ready to pick a plan. Well, if you've never picked a plan, it's a bit challenging. And I'm saying that because I was in corporate for almost 15, 20 years. And every year when it came around to sign up for my insurance, I just decided whether I had dependent coverage, whether I wanted vision and dental, and whether I wanted an HMO, whether I wanted a PPO. An HMO is a health maintenance organization, and a PPO is a preferred something-something. But it's a managed health plan. It wasn't that difficult when I was in corporate because I had the best fee structure. We were in a group policy. The deductibles were low. I didn't have to pay any attention to the deductibles. They were so low, I almost didn't even know I had deductibles. Well, that's not the case now.
Right, exactly.
That is not the case. And so you're going to need to know the difference between all these money terms, such as what's copayment, whether you do a copayment for your doctor before you meet your deductible or after you meet your deductible, what your co-insurance is, meaning what percentage do you have to pay and your insurance will pay. If you have an 80-20 plan, your insurance will pay 80% and you'll pay 20%. But you also have a deductible that you have to meet even before you get into your co-insurance. And I'm thinking, boy, I have a graduate degree working on another graduate degree, and I didn't find that to be quite so simple. It had been done before. I mean, what we tried to do, Patrick, and what you saw on Saturday when we worked with the NAACP, we're trying to bring in subject matter experts that can help you through all of these areas. Subject matter experts like navigators who can help navigate you through the process of setting up an account, completing your application, verifying your identity, getting your eligibility letter to see how much subsidy you're going to have available to help you pay for your insurance and those out-of-pocket costs like deductibles and co-insurance. That's one expert. The second experts are insurance brokers or providers who can give you, I call it healthcare insurance policy selection 101, as well as tips to how to select a plan. But that's not my area of expertise. And you may agree with me that our presenter that we had on yesterday, she made it make sense even for me because those deductibles can get pretty high.
Right.
I mean, you've got policies that have deductibles up to $7,500.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on where you are in your health structure, now, me, I would get a high deductible. I'm in good health. I haven't had any major surgeries. I'm not on any meds. I don't have high blood pressure. I don't have any of that. And so I'm not likely to probably have to have anything done that would require some major work for me to meet my deductible. So when I met with my broker, she suggested, George, you may want to get a policy with a high deductible. And the money that you will save, because the higher your deductible, the cheaper your premiums. And since I'm in pretty good health, she said, you may want to get a policy with a higher deductible, like $2,500, $3,000, or something like that, and have lower premiums, or get a higher deductible of $5,000, and take that extra money and put it in a health savings account. So because there's no need in paying for a low deductible and paying a high premium if you're not likely to. So having some expertise for somebody to sit down with you to look at your particular situation and giving you some wisdom can help you select the plan that's right for you. That's the toughest part. When the numbers came out, we started rolling in October, and the numbers from the Fed came out around middle of the 9th or 10th of November. And President Obama's office, they were reporting that we enrolled 106,000 people that actually enrolled. You're not enrolled until you pick a plan and pay a premium.
Okay.
So there's a difference between completing an application and getting enrolled. Enrolled is, I completed the application, I picked a plan, and I paid my first month's premium. That's enrolled. And so the bottlenecking is where when people get through the enrollment process, in other words, they get down to where they complete the application, their eligibility letter is generated, their identity is confirmed, and now they're ready to pick a plan. And that's where people are having problems. So while the website was an issue, another issue is picking a plan. For example, Patrick, I was looking at the website for New York, and New York has a state health care system where you can sign on in their state system. Texas, we're on the federal system because the state opted out of Medicaid, and they didn't set up a system, so you use the federal system. On their website, it says, as of December, and I read this on December the 12th, as of December the 9th, it said 314-plus people had completed the application, but only 100,000 had enrolled.
Wow.
Because you're not enrolled until you pick a plan. And one of the reasons you want to really use subject matter experts on picking a plan, because when it's all over, you're the one that's going to have to use a plan. You need to know what you have. You're not going to be able to call your broker like your doctor and say, okay, now, what was it I got? So you need to really look at what your family needs, look at what those deductibles mean, look at what kind of co-pays you have. For example, she mentioned yesterday, there's likely a co-pay when you go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
A couple hundred dollar co-pay.
Yep.
Now, if I haven't had issues before, when I go to the emergency room, I'm going to walk in there and say, here's my Blue Cross Blue Shield card, and here's my Aetna card, because you're going to have cards just like everybody else. Your card is not going to look at whether I get a subsidy or not. Your card is going to look just like my card. So I'm excited because, if you've been going to the emergency room and using charitable care and, going down there as a charity case, and you hope they see you in the next 2 hours and you got to wait. But now I got insurance. I got my Blue Cross Blue Card. I come in and I whip it out, and they see me and they take care of me. And then 2 weeks later, I get a bill from the emergency room. I'm gonna be wondering, what is this? I got insurance, because sometimes there may be a thought, and I've had conversations with people. They didn't realize that there were co-pays. They've never done this before.
Right, right.
And they get a bill that you may have to pay. So there are some out-of-pocket costs that are associated with having insurance in addition to the premium. So understanding the kind of policy that you select, your deductibles, your copay, they even have something that's called your prescription formulary.
Hmm.
Big term. It's talking about what your prescriptions can look like, what your plan will cover, whether your plan, to what degree it covers generic prescriptions, name brand prescriptions. Now, while you're not sick and you may not be taking any meds, that may not be a real big issue for you.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people already out there that have pre-existing conditions, and you need to look at what kind of policy you get and how it's going to affect your prescriptions.
You
so
know,
we don't know how to do that.
You know, I like that you mentioned that because, you know, in the event that you do have some pre-existing condition now, you may go with a policy that has a low deductible, so therefore you get covered. And then as you get more healthy, then you can increase over time your policy or decrease the amount of coverage you do over a policy. But the main point or the main takeaway that I'm getting is that get covered because that's the security that you will have, A, for your health, and then B, to know that you can walk into a place and be seen just like anybody else is seen and potentially having to pay a very low premium when it's all said and done. So that's an amazing feat, I think, that people need to take away from that. And that is, again, being able to if you do have some pre-existing condition, as you mentioned, something that's wrong that you know you need to get fixed and you know there's a problem – when you sign up, it may be the case that you go with something that's reasonable, low in deductible. It may be a higher premium, but if you're getting a subsidy, I think it's going to all work itself out. And then maybe next year when open enrollment comes again, then you're all better, you're more healthy, then you can look at other plans. And so and the other thing I wanted to mention is that you talked about paying your premium. So, again, it's not just enough to put your information in the website. It's not just enough to select the plan, but that additional step has to be taken. It says, I'm going to go ahead and pay my first month's premium, especially if you're getting subsidized. And the government has said that, you know, we're going to provide, you know, 70, 80, 90, whatever the percentage is of your premium, at least your health care costs, is go ahead and best to make that payment. And now you know you're covered as of January 1st.
Patrick, you made really a lot of really good points, particularly you know what your health condition is, and you know that you're going to need your insurance. You probably want to work to get a low deductible going in because your premium prices are going to be the same when you enroll now, regardless of whether you have a pre-existing condition or not. But going forward, you know what your situation is, but so you want to take that under consideration. The second thing you brought up is as you get healthier, I like what you said. We want to get healthier. As you get healthier, you may want to look at changing your plan because you know whatever you choose, you're stuck with it. Until the next open enrollment, unless you just don't pay your premiums and then you just get dropped. And so you're going to be making this decision every year, just like we do in our regular jobs. Everywhere on the job, you make a decision about signing up for your health care every year. And so I like what you said. When you look at your own medical condition, give some consideration to the deductible. The other thing, let me point out, too, on the subsidy, they're called tax credit premiums, meaning they help you pay for the premium payment for your insurance. What will happen is if you qualify and you're eligible, there is a certain percentage that you may receive based on your income level. Like, for instance, the lowest income you can have to qualify for a subsidy is $11,490. The highest you can, for one individual in a family, for the highest you can have is $45,960. Well, if you had $40,000, you know, they're probably not going to pay a whole lot of your premium. They may pay, and this is a gift, they may pay maybe 10%. But if you're down on that end between $12,000 and probably $15,000, more than likely they're going to pay most of your premium. If they end up where you pick a plan and it covers all of your premium, except for maybe $26, $30, or something like that, the subsidy to help you pay for it will go directly to the insurance company. You will be billed for the $26. You got to make sure you pay that $26 in order for you to be covered. Am I making sense? So you may want to put it on automatic withdrawal. You don't want to mess that up.
No, and you know, and I mentioned this yesterday. You're talking about messing them. I mentioned this yesterday, and I know a lot of people sometimes have the mindset of allowing things to lapse and trying to, you know, and we say in our community sometimes rob Peter to pay Paul and things of this nature. But, you know, if you don't pay those light bills, they cut them off. And so you want to make sure this is on a top priority list because, again, you don't want to be in a situation where you happen to pay penalties and on top of penalties or doing anything like that. I mean, this isn't a basic responsibility. The government, in particular, President Obama fought, you know, tooth and nail, put his career on the line and says, I want to extend health care benefits to all. And so I think it's just only fair that we extend the next our responsibility and to pay it forward by saying we're going to do our part by A, signing up, paying our premiums, and getting more healthy.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. Getting educated, signing up, paying our premiums, and telling others. Now, you helped me think of a question that I hadn't thought about asking. Is there a grace period in case I accidentally, not intentionally, but I accidentally forget to pay my part? Do I have a grace period? Do they just cut me off? Is it just expired? I don't know the answer to that question, but this conversation is going to make me go back and find the answer to that. Because sometimes things just happen. You know, recently I have a storage building, and my payment is recurring from my debit card every month. Well, my debit card expired. I live in two places, and my mail goes to my home in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my building called me, and I've had the building for years. And they called me because it was unusual. They said, Joyce, it kicked out. It wouldn't pay. I said, oh, my God, my debit card expired. I got a new one, and I didn't, you know, get it re-upped, da-da-da. So there are things that happen. So I'm saying, surely there has to be some grace period when it comes to expiration on premium payment, because it is on everything else. So, but you don't want to just intentionally not pay it, but
Absolutely.
Make sure you ask your insurance company that if something happens, is there a grace period before you before my insurance is invalid? Do you call me? Do you check, or when you don't get my payment, is it just gone?
Awesome. So I know I promised you 20 or 30 minutes. I kept you longer. Please forgive me, but this has been so valuable to me and my listening audience. If you have a few more minutes, I want you to kind of give me your any final thoughts or final comments, anything along those lines.
I really appreciate you, Patrick, doing this show to help people become aware and get some of the facts without a lot of the noise. To close, I would encourage your listening audience, whether you have insurance, whether you don't have insurance, take the time and go on healthcare.gov and find out some of the basic things about the Affordable Health Care Act. Take the time to help someone else get insured. And the reason that's important, Patrick, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday, when it comes to insurance, you have something that's called a risk pool. And the more you put healthy people in the risk pool, we're able to help balance the cost of health care by helping healthy people get insured. Because you have a lot of young people who think they're invincible, they're healthy, this is not even on their radar, that will not get insurance because they're going to spend their money doing something else. We want to encourage those young people to be a part of the solution and help balance the risk pool by bringing their young, healthy bodies into the process of getting health care so it can help keep the health care costs down. And I likened this yesterday to, you know, we have Social Security. And Social Security came about in 1935 during the Franklin Roosevelt presidency, because mm-hmm. we were coming out of the Depression of 1931. And the country was broken. It didn't matter whether you were black, whether you were white. You know, we were struggling. Unemployment was high. You couldn't even find a rabbit. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
And you had people who were not socially secure. And so Social Security was one of the most sweeping reforms in this country. It was fought. Everybody didn't agree with it. And it created a place where we pay X number of dollars out of our check, you know, that's FICA, that federal living something, but we know FICA when we see it.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Yeah, everybody gets FICA. It comes out. But that was put in place where when you got to be old enough and you were at a certain age, you would be socially secure. You would be able to at least have enough retirement to pay your rent, to have a place to stay. And Patrick, you and I both know, if they didn't make a lot of people pay FICA, when they got old, they wouldn't have nothing to live on.
That's right.
We're not big on savings. We're not that big on putting money into retirement, putting it aside, unless somebody makes it. I mean, and so here we are again with health care. It is a mandate. It is not an option. You have individual mandates, and you have small business mandates. That's another one. I hope you come back and do a show and maybe have somebody from SBA to talk about the small business mandate. And so as we close, we want to recognize that this health care reform is big. It's going to take a minute. It's not going to be overnight. Yes, it's forcing some of us to change some of our budgets to get health care, but it's not just about us individually. It's about us as a country becoming more healthy, helping one another out. So as I close, I'm going to say get educated. Whether you have insurance or not, help educate others. Help encourage others. So in the long run, it will save us money. It's going to make us healthier. It's going to make us happier. We're going to live longer. And we're going to see this legislation come to fruition. And we're going to be free. Free. You know, like when they said the Emancipation Proclamation, we were freed from slavery. Now we're being freed from not having good, healthy lives and long lives where you not managing your day because you own 15 meds. You know, moving into prevention where we are getting detected early, getting our screenings done. This law was, which Patrick is so much. It was about getting everybody health care, but it was also about moving a country to prevention. Do you know we're one of the most treatment countries in the world where we treat disease? You know, the average person has five things they have to manage. Typically, if they have high blood pressure, they got some cholesterol issues, layered in with some congestive heart failure, some obesity, you know, and you end up managing your health, and it's taken away from your health. Part of this law was about moving you to getting those screenings. That's why you don't have copay. They don't want anything to hit. Go get your checkups.
You're right.
Get
right.
Your prostate checked. Get your diabetes checked. You know, there's a difference between being pre-diabetes and diabetes.
Yes.
Because once you cross that line, it changes your world. Don't cross the line. Get your checkup. And if you're pre-diabetes, then change your eating habits so you don't cross the line, because your whole world changes when you become diabetic. So, you know, I don't even know how to close this conversation because this law is about, you know, every time I start talking, I think of something else. Because this law is so comprehensive. You know, Patrick, I made a decision in my 20s, and just about everybody in my family has high blood pressure. I made a decision. I am not going to have high blood pressure.
All right.
Which means, I started changing my eating habits. Some of them I didn't really even have to change. You know, when I try not to eat. You know, I'll eat fried foods every now and then, but I try not to. And I love me some bacon.
Oh, yeah.
I love me some bacon. But, you know, honestly, I don't even have the taste for it. And
nah.
I started moving toward eating more turkey. I even cook my turnip greens with turkey. You can't even tell the difference.
It's a mindset.
Absolutely. My cabbage, I cook them with smoked turkey. You cannot tell the difference. And so started changing my eating habits. I'm 56 years old. I feel healthy. The other thing I want the listening audience, when you start picking a plan, sometimes you have insurance providers that may have what you call value added. You may want to ask them, you know, is there a workout plan in there? Are there any benefits for me to go to the gym?
And so
this law was about providing health care, but it was also about prevention. And it's also about lowering the cost of health care. And it's also about the delivery of health care, making sure you got a great doctor, it's not just about making folks trying to get insurance. So get educated.
That was awesome. That was awesome. I'm here to tell you that was just, thank you so much for coming today. We're going to continue this for the next several months. You know, every other week or so, I'm going to have a person on to talk specifically about an issue. You talked about the small business mandate. Now I'm going to add that to the list. We're going to talk about just healthcare plans. We may even just narrow it down just to talk just the difference between HMO and PPO and just deductibles or just subsidies. So we're going to continue this fight. And I am so glad that you dropped so much knowledge on me and the listening audience today. So I really appreciate you coming today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for doing this show. Thank you for providing great information for the listening audience so they can make a quality decisions using good information that you provide.
All right. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Thank you.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Jim, I want to bring you back on now. What do you think about that? It's a lot of good information in that segment.
I'm sorry. Yes, it was I was trying to take some notes so I could make sure I had some things to pass on to people, because it's amazing. I think what she said relating it to the Emancipation Proclamation is that it really is just a lack of knowledge. People just don't know. And they think they know because they think they've heard it all on television and they really believe what they've been hearing. And the unfortunate part is that the people haven't been giving them the true, complete story. So I applaud her efforts and those that are working as those navigators and people. But she said more than anything, to get your own information and go out and research it for yourself by going out to the website and then finding those different places that have face-to-face people that you can ask questions of, I think is a part that's been missing. And a lot of people are just not taking advantage of them. I mean, just...
Right.
I think scripture says, you know, we perish for lack of knowledge. And, you know, people are dying every day from illnesses that could be prevented if yet they had health care. So, you know, we've been on this train for a long time in terms of pushing out information, and I don't plan on getting off anytime soon because I do want people to be healthy, to live longer. And not just live a life, but to live a life that's fulfilling to them. And you can't do that if you're sick all the time or you've got some disease that you can't manage because you can't afford your medication. So I want people's lives to be as God intended them to be. And he intended us to live happy, healthy, wholesome lives, not bent over and crooked over and unable to sustain ourselves or take care of ourselves. So I'm excited about this new information, and hopefully we can continue to be a vessel to be used to inform the community.
All right. Any final thoughts?
I think today's show was an excellent show. We covered a lot of territory. It was great, as usual, and I hope we served our purpose to the listening audience, and I hope we were able to answer some questions that someone may have had out there today. So I thank you, sir, for allowing me the opportunity to see you today. It was a pleasure.
It is always a pleasure being with you, too. All right. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And a special thanks to Joyce Campbell. Man, she was amazing today. As I say every week, my people perish for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sound of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.